watch for the red light.
Watch for the red light. Thank you, Esther. Jerry, you're here. I thought you weren't going to be back yet. Good for you. All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It is Wednesday, October 23rd, approximately 10 a.m. for our regularly scheduled commission meeting. Our agenda today isn't that long, but a short agenda doesn't mean a short meeting, so we'll get into that as soon as we can. I do have a couple comments I'd like to start out with before I turn it over to my colleagues. The first one, I'll just take a little personal indulgence. The October 23rd marks the 30th anniversary of the Marine Corps bombing of the barracks in Beirut, Lebanon. It was the first time that I would say that terrorism really hit home for, I think, a lot of people. 241 Marines, soldiers, and sailors were killed, which was, I think, the first time that terrorism really hit U.S. targets overseas. And it became like the beginning of, hey, this terrorism is for real. And I ended up joining the Marine Corps a couple years later, and a lot of the guys and gals that I work for were directly tied into that. And so as that thing unfolded, it was 2003 that a federal judge ruled that Hezbollah was responsible, and it was directed by the Iranian government. So as we sit here, you know, post-September 11th, over a decade, this has been going on a long time. So I think it's one of the things that, for me personally, after I retired from the Marine Corps, ended up running for this job, because I still believe, as strong as I did in my initial days, whether it was Desert Storm when Hussein lit the oil fields on fire, or whether it was Iraq when our objective the first day was the Ramadi oil field, that it is absolutely imperative that the U.S. have energy security, period. And so that's my dialogue on that. And it should be noted that there were four Marines from Minnesota that were killed in the Beirut bombing at that day. And there was a Marine from Devil's Lake that was killed a few days later at the airport after the barracks was blown up. They had to retrograde out of there as quickly as possible. That was a decision President Reagan made. So got some Marines out by ship, and then the rest went to the airport. And the airport was mortared several days. And so there was a Marine from Devil's Lake. And actually, the Minot Daily has a story on that today. Lance Corporal Todd Kraft, and there's a remembrance ceremonies in Devil's Lake today, and also at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, where they have the Marine Monument to those that were killed. So that struck pretty close to home. Fast-forwarding a little bit to, I guess, my next topic, kind of an awkward segue, but yesterday I was up in Tioga, and I viewed the spill site. I'd made comments previously in the last couple of weeks about maybe the PSC having a larger role of looking at intrastate crude lines, and we'll see how that all plays out. I know that I'll visit with my colleagues about that, but there's still a lot of questions that we have to answer about exactly why the spill happened, and we're working with PHMSA on that. That's, of course, their jurisdiction once it goes into operation. And if all goes well today at 11:15, they're going to be calling in and giving us their update of what they know now. But I just give, you know, my thoughts on what I saw on the cleanup. I got to the site. It's exactly as it's been reported. It, on a hillside, not much around there. Tesoro was fully engaged now. They've got a safety manager up there. They've got a recovery manager up there. They've got people in place. A system of monitoring wells that go from a shallow well monitoring of, I think they said, 15 feet to deep water monitoring wells that are well below 20 feet. So they've got the spill site thoroughly contained with monitoring wells and all surrounding it. And they've actually poured even concrete berms just to be double safe, if you will, that none of the product can leave the site. And so the health department, as well as others, are involved in the direct remediation of it. But, you know, you get a mental visual. You get a visual in your mind of what happened before you see it. But once I saw it, it really, with all the activity going on up there, it doesn't stick out because there's just so much going on there. But there are concerns of, I guess, the company making sure that they can continue to work as long as they can this year. And it looks like they're going to do a lot of the remediation right in place. And then when winter comes, kind of just let it do what it can in the winter. And then as the spring comes, then they'll get back at it. But I was actually very impressed with what I saw with Tesoro to this point in the cleanup. And one more thought. We have an item, JF1, that I'm going to ask to hold over. JF1 is dealing with the commission potentially approving what I would consider a relatively small pipeline. And I did not have any concerns initially when we did the hearing. It's 10.2 miles of 14-inch crude in Williams County. And all I want to do is, during the hearing, we did ask the questions like we always ask about their SCADA system and how it works, that if there's a pressure drop, how it'll be monitored and all those things. And their record talks about how that system will work. But what I asked Pat to do, Fawn, and is that I want to go through that record even more thoroughly, given the current leak that we have, just to better understand for myself. When they say they have a SCADA system, is it a system that is active monitoring where there's someone looking at a valve? Is it a system that once a month they have to go out and look at the pressure tickets that will show drops? And so I would open that up to my colleagues that if we want to go up there together, my thought is that have a more thorough review of the record and maybe even go up there in the next week or so and tour their operations center of how they monitor these pipeline flows. And so I think that seems prudent given what's happened. And personally myself is that I had an understanding of these SCADA systems that somebody is always looking at them all the time. And I think there's many of them that that's the case. But there are also some that they don't get to them until they look at the monthly printouts or the weekly printouts. So that just seemed prudent. So I understand that will be a delay, but I think it'll be a worthwhile delay. And I'd anticipate that we can get up there. I'll offer up to my colleagues, and we would notice it to go up there and tour the site. But if they can't make it, I'm still going to get up there. And then once satisfied, we could either have a special meeting for that, or we could just put it on our next regular agenda. So that's my long comments for this morning. I would be turned over to Commissioner Christman.
I have no opening comments except for to thank you for the little history lesson. We all, I think, have September 11th in our minds as the anniversary date when it comes to terrorist-related activities, and I was not aware of today's place in infamy. So thank you for that lesson.
Sure. All right, Commissioner Fedorcha.
I'd echo those comments of appreciation, and tell me again how many people were killed, Marines?
241 airmen, sailors, and Marines. The numbers are 220 Marines, 18 sailors, and 3 soldiers.
Wow.
So it was the first time that we had a direct attack on U.S. forces overseas, if you will, since probably World War II. But it was a hallmark day in terrorism, I know, for the Marine Corps, because that became the training doctrine that the Marine Corps then started implementing, that understand who the terrorists are, understand how to get in and get out of there, learned a lot of lessons from what happened in that embassy bombing. And I was actually involved in the embassy evacuation of the Liberia embassy in the late 90s. And that became the icon of, you know, protect the ambassador, get the people out, get in there quickly, get out of there, find out who the bad guys are before you get in there. It set a lot of doctrine, which we still use today.
Interesting. Thank you for reminding us of that important day. It's always interesting traveling with Commissioner Kalk, because it doesn't matter what we're doing, he'll have some random memory from his times in the Marines.
Some are true.
You do have to wonder how many. Anyway, I also thank you for going up and checking out that spill. I've had some long conversations with the company as well on what they're doing to clean up and recover, and how we can assure the integrity of that pipeline, the existing pipeline, other sections of that pipeline, and also the same what our jurisdiction is, could be, should be, those sorts of things. And I look forward to that discussion in the admin portion of our meeting today as well, because we have that on the agenda. I think it's a good move to hold over JF1. I did relook at the record and examine some of the facts that the company shared with us during our hearing in terms of how they tested that pipe. And the one thing that is clear in there is that the pipe will be authorized for a higher pressure, but they won't be operating at a higher pressure. And I think that was one of the challenges with this, the SORA line, is it was a low pressure. And that on a low pressure line, it's harder to detect leaks. They're more subtle because the pressure drop isn't as significant. So I think that lends itself to a closer look for this application 12-683. So I'm happy to concur with you on that. Otherwise, I have no other additional comments.
Thank you, Julie. I did neglect to say one thing. The company has in place the pipeline reroute, if you will. I walked where that's going to be, and they clearly have the reroute around there, but they're working with PHMSA now on their restart plan, so that's someone else's jurisdiction there as well. But they've got the pipeline in place for the reroute. They're working with PHMSA to get the operation to restart that. So it is interesting, though. It's a question that we'll have, I think, later, too, is that in their reroute after the incident, my understanding is that they're still inside the corridor, so that's fine, but the notification they should have given us, or if it's even required, when they do the reroute. So there's a lot of lessons, I think, that we're learning on this that will be applied going forward. Okay, subject to any other comments, that's probably the longest opening comments we've had since the three of us have been here, mostly mine. There are a few items on consent. I would move passage.
Second.
We have a motion and a second, or is there any further discussion? Since none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Daryl. I just have one item today, item BK1. I move the commission adopt the order granting the application of Griggs County Telephone Company for certificates of public convenience and necessity to provide facility-based incumbent local exchange services in the Enderlin and Sheldon Exchange areas in North Dakota, case number PU 13-330, and designating Griggs County Telephone Company as an eligible telecommunication carrier in those exchange areas, case number PU 13-329.
Second.
A little background. Griggs County Telephone provides facility-based incumbent local exchange telecommunication services in Binford, Cooperstown, Findlay, and the McHenry Exchange areas in North Dakota. Moore and Liberty Telephone Company provided facility-based incumbent local exchange services in the Enderlin and Sheldon exchanges in North Dakota. Last year, Moore and Liberty merged with Griggs. So what this order does today is it basically, Griggs filed an application to serve in the Enderlin-Sheldon exchanges since they merged as one company. The commission issued a notice opportunity for hearing, providing up until August the 23rd for anyone to have requests or comments for a hearing. None was requested. The commission, I believe, did an informal on this. I believe the Griggs is fit and able to provide telecommunication services in the Enderlin and Sheldon exchanges. And so basically we're going to reissue certificate number 5809 that was issued to Moore and Liberty to Griggs County now since they merged together. And the certificate that was issued to Moore and Liberty is no, I'm sorry, the certificate is transferred, but Moore and Liberty Telephone Company is no longer designated as an ETC in the Enderlin and Sheldon exchange areas. So mostly administrative here today as the company completes its final tasks for as they merge.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Daryl. That concludes the items in my portfolio today.
Mr. Chairman, item number RC1, I move the commission acknowledge Bryn Tag Pacific Incorporated's August 15, 2013 filing of a compliance plan concerning its truck scale located at Dickinson, North Dakota, and grant an extension of the temporary variance permit issued for the truck scale, changing the expiration date from October 31st of this year to October 31st of 2014. This is case number WM-13-316.
Second.
The issue with this scale is that the slope of the ramp coming up to it is slightly steeper than what our rules allow. We allow one-third of an inch per foot of drop. And this is not a lot steeper, but it is steeper. And The variance permit conditions, I think, are the key thing here. This would require the scale to be at an acceptable tolerance as identified by the NIST handbook, and they are. It would require that the scale be retested and adjusted once every 3 months by a registered service company, so much more frequent testing. The three-month registered service company test report has to be submitted to the commission within 7 working days of the test. The service company test reports must include both the as-found and the as-left readings, so we know whether they're having to continually make adjustments or whether it's holding its accuracy. And the scale is operated according to all applicable North Dakota laws and rules. And so I think this gives them a year to prove that with this amount of slope that the scale stays in adjustment, and then we can move on from there.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Item RC2, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-13-810, granting the request of Annie's Incorporated of Berkeley, California, to operate as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota.
Second.
Annie's is a natural and organic food company, and they estimate they'll purchase less than 100,000 bushels of grain in North Dakota during the first year of operation. They filed a corresponding $50,000 surety bond. All the statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends that a license be issued.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And my last item, RC3, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-13-827, granting the request of Birdsall Grain and Seed, LLC, to operate a 28,000-bushel grain warehouse at Berthold, North Dakota, effective immediately.
Second.
Birdsall Grain and Seed has been operating a seed cleaning and sales business and is expanding to include grain buying activities. So all the statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends the license be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That's it for me.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. All right, Commissioner Fedorchak.
Well, with the moving of JF1... to a later date, we'll be speeding right along. I would say that on this one, we should try to settle on what we're going to do fairly quickly, because this pipeline, while we need to make sure we understand how it's going to be operated, it will take hundreds of trucks off the road, and it's an important project, so I think we want to move it along as quickly as we can.
I will add that to scheduling, and then we can determine if all three of us want to go, or if just whoever wants to go, we can get that scheduled to go up there.
Or if the company could come here.
I'd like to tour their operations center.
Is there an operations center for this pipeline?
There is somewhere, and that's the part that I have to go.
I know they have shut-off valves on the front. You know, there's valves out there, but...
That's the part of the discussion that I want to have, is that the SCADA systems, the company is always brief. Not always. Mostly brief. There's an operations center where they monitor these pipelines 24/7. So I want to see is where is that monitored 24/7? So if that's in North Dakota, then we look at it there. If it's somewhere else, I'd still go there to look at it. Because that's the part that to me is key, is that the 24/7 monitoring, how is that done? And to see what the person actually sees doing the monitoring. So, but we'll see how that plays out. But I'll add it to scheduling.
Sounds good. Okay. Item number JF2. I move the commission issue the notice of public input sessions in Montana Dakota Utility Company's natural gas rate increase application, case number PU-13-803.
Second.
On September 18th, MDU filed an application to increase its rates for natural gas service to provide an additional revenue of $6.8 million or 6.4% increase over current rates. At our last meeting, October 9th, we approved an interim rate increase of $4.5 million, 4.162% over current rates. MDU is required to refund any interim rate amounts in excess of the final rates approved by the commission. This motion today is just to announce some public input sessions where we can invite the public to meet with us, hear the company's plans, hear why they think they need this additional revenue, and have a conversation with us so we can hear what's on the minds of the ratepayers here. We're proposing December 10th at 7 p.m. and December 11th at 12 p.m. Central Time at locations in Williston, Minot, Bismarck, Lake Region, Dickinson, and Jamestown. And it's also important to note that the public input session is not considered part of the technical hearing, and the discussion is not part of the official record, but it does help advise us in our thought process and in the questions that we might ask and make part of the official record as we consider this case.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Darrell, I just had a couple thoughts. Is that the commission has historically, and I think it's a very good idea, offered two different times. So this is December 10th at 7 p.m. in the evening, the next day December 11th at noon, so we can give the public the most opportunity to come and say their piece and hear the company's viewpoint, why they need the rate case. And in this particular case, we're actually having six locations. In previous rate cases, we've had three locations and then added Bismarck in there. But in this case, given the scope of the infrastructure of gas for MDU, we've typically, you know, focused on your Minots and your Bismarcks and your Dickinsons. But, you know, Williston, of course, is up there. In this case, Devil's Lake and Jamestown are going to be added. So commissioners will try to spread ourselves out as much as we can. I don't know if we'll flip-flop back and forth, but we'll for sure make sure we have a rep from the PSC at each one of these locations, as well as monitor it here from Bismarck. So thanks. I think Scott was big setting all this up and everyone else, because this is a – it's hard to get it all scheduled, make it all work, but you got to put together as quickly as needed. So thank you for that.
And that was one of my questions. We have these locations confirmed and held for those dates.
We do. Now they could change, and that becomes one of the challenges we deal with. But as of right now, we've got confirmation, and we hope that everything holds.
So it'd be all Scott's fault if anything goes wrong?
Yes.
Okay.
And if it's any indication, the last rate case hearings, we had just a handful of members of the public show up. And so we're hoping that more people show up this time around so we can get the information from folks and hear what's on their mind.
Well, and we have a separate order that we've issued on intervention deadlines. I'm not sure if we've issued that, but there is.
Yeah, we did.
We issued that. So there may be interveners in this case as well, too. I've already heard informally on interveners. So this case is it's going to be a good, thorough review of their infrastructure.
Is there further discussion? Since you're not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission deem complete pending receipt of the archaeological studies report, the applications of Bakken Oil Express, LLC, for a corridor certificate, a route permit, and for a waiver of procedures and time schedules concerning the construction of a 38-mile, 16-inch diameter crude oil pipeline in Dunn and Stark Counties, North Dakota, and issue a notice of filings and notice of hearing in case number PU-13-825.
Second.
So Bakken Oil Express has filed an application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for a 38-mile, 16-inch crude oil pipeline in Dunn and Stark counties. We are setting a public hearing date during our scheduling portion of our meeting for Killdeer. The hearing will take place in Killdeer City Hall in Killdeer, North Dakota. And we'll be considering whether it's appropriate to waive the procedures and time schedules, and we will be considering the location, the application for the corridor and route permit.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Finally, let's see here. I move the commission issue a notice of filing and a notice of hearing in the application of Dakota Prairie Refining, LLC, for a waiver of procedures and time schedules, a corridor certificate, and a route permit for 2 6-inch petroleum product transmission lines in Stark County, North Dakota, case number PU-13-799.
Second.
This is an application by Dakota Prairie Refining, which is the company building the diesel refinery out on west of Dickinson. In that project, they will have two product pipelines from the Dakota Prairie Refinery transporting refining products from the Dakota Prairie Refinery to Bakken Oil Express Rail Hub. This is the first greenfield refinery built in the U.S. since the 1970s, and it's going to be processing 20,000 barrels per day of Bakken crude and producing 7,000 to 8,000 barrels per day of diesel, much-needed diesel fuel in western North Dakota. this is a great project. It's providing diesel fuel very close to the source of where it's needed. The projections for demand for diesel fuel are climbing steadily, and so this is a really exciting project. The refinery is anticipated to be in service by the end of 2014, and these pipelines are needed to be constructed and in place prior to completion of this project. The company had asked for a waiver of all of our procedures and time schedules, and because it narrowly meets the siting threshold for this, these pipelines are just over the siting threshold by 400 feet. The siting threshold is 1 mile, and they're 1.08 miles. The pipelines consist of a 6-inch diameter pipe and an 8-inch diameter heat trace and insulated pipeline for transfer of atmospheric tower bottoms and atmospheric gas oil, and the other pipeline will transfer naphtha. The pipeline will mostly run overground, and there are a couple elements of the application that make it a little bit more complicated than would warrant waiving all of the procedures. So the company said this is not an emergency. I think that we can proceed with our normal course of business and have a hearing on this pipeline. There's a couple factors. Like I said, it crosses a road and it crosses a river, and I think those warrant discussion in a normal course of business at a hearing and more careful analysis of this project. And we can still do that, I'm confident, and meet the company's deadline for construction. So I recommend that we proceed in our normal course of business and have a hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. Thank you, Darrell. Okay. I'm just looking forward. Let's look at the schedule a little bit out here. We've got a meeting tomorrow morning with the RECs. They're going to come over, and we don't obviously have any jurisdiction on how the RECs operate, but they're going to tell us what's going on with some of their build-out around the state, as well as some of the challenges they're facing. And we certainly do cite some REC equipment when it becomes jurisdictional, so that'll be a good meeting tomorrow, as well as a budget update. And then just you can look at the schedule. Next, I guess, the 31st and November, 31st of October and the 1st of November, two NSP hearings on advanced termination of prudence dealing with several wind projects. And as most of you are well aware of, we're still in the discussion on the current XL rate case. And so lots going on these days. But I don't have any other closing comments. Commissioner Christman?
I have none either.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
No.
Okay. We'd be happy to try to answer any questions we can.
Just for reference, you mentioned the SCADA system, and I was going to ask this earlier. What does SCADA stand for?
I'm going to have to give you the law. I don't know off the top of my head. Supervisory. Patrick, can you help me out, or dear?
System Advisory Control Data and Acquisition. SCADA. System Control and Data Acquisition.
System Control and Data Acquisition.
SCDA. Okay.
I don't feel as bad given the experience over there.
More importantly, what does it do?
that is the way they monitor pressure.
The pressure drops.
That is the way we're told that they monitor everything. And that's, why I want to go up and actually look at one of these centers. I've seen the centers in MISO where they look at the power moving around. But when we're in our pipeline cases, we always ask the questions about emergency response and the planning and how quick they'll notice things. But as I learn more about these 24/7 monitoring, it seems like there's an active and a passive kind of monitoring. So I want to go up and look at one of these operations centers. And so I think it's important that we fully understand what these monitoring systems do and what they don't do as we continue to site pipelines, because that certainly is in our jurisdiction of transmission lines.
One thing about the monitoring, I think there's a couple of systems for monitoring. The SCADA is one of them, and that's the pressure testing and monitoring, and it identifies when there's a drop in pressure. But on a low pressure line, you may not notice a huge drop in pressure until you visually see it, which is, I think, what happened in this case. We'll know more when the final study is done. But additional advanced monitoring systems exist that would more carefully control or monitor the inputs and the outputs, and have somebody on both ends of the pipe measuring how much is going in versus how much is coming out, that type of a system probably would have been more effective in detecting quicker this leak.
When you were up and you had discussions with Tesoro, did they tell you, give you a timeline about when they expect cleanup to be completed?
You know, I think that's better a question for the health department, because actually even I'll share with you what they shared with me. I asked kind of that question generally, but I think a lot depends on what technology they select. Dealing with the farmer, they have a short-term technology where they can basically burn things in place and do things much quicker. They have a longer-term strategy that allows more of the natural attenuation of soils to break things down by, they talked about adding compost in there, and they were going to work with the landowner, but my understanding is the company has a meeting with PHMSA as well as the health department to determine basically their long-term strategy and how they're going to remediate this.
And in terms of replacing pipeline, you said that they still think they're within the corridor and they don't need any additional hearings. Is that the deal?
That was the question I asked up there. I said, you know, you guys did this reroute, and I didn't even know about the reroute. But then I had to go back and meet with Pat and see. My initial discussion with Patrick was, if it's in the corridor, everything should be fine. They should still notify us. And so that's some of this we have to kind of flush out, is what exactly the roles and responsibilities of everyone is on that. I mean, Patrick, do you have anything to add on that? I know we talked about it briefly.
No.
Did that summarize it accurately?
Sure.
Okay.
They may consider the repair.
It does sound like there needs to be more or better communication at this point. It sounds like there were some breakdowns, and you're working maybe to get better communication, better monitoring, et cetera.
Well, and I think that's the larger issue. There's all these people that share jurisdiction on pipelines. As Julie's pointed out, the gathering lines have a whole different set of rules. Once it becomes transmission siting, the commission absolutely has jurisdiction on siting over a mile. So we'll site them, but if it's crude, it goes into operation, PHMSA jurisdictional. If it's natural gas, local, it might be our jurisdiction. So I think it's these pass off of jurisdictions in the operations of pipelines that we need to close some of those seams. And that's a question that I will ask the PHMSA representative hopefully today at 11:15, is how best to move information as the jurisdiction crosses these seams, because there's some discussion that we've had with legal that the commission issues the initial siting order. So if something turns out in this investigation that it was built improperly, well, does that go back to siting? These are a lot of legal questions that I can't answer right now. But I know that, you know, in the incident we had in Fargo in 2009, it was a bad deal. A house had an explosion in it. There were several people that were injured. Luckily, no one was killed. But we definitely had jurisdiction on that. And as we went through, the company had did all the maintenance properly. The inspection schedule had gone according to plan. But during construction, it looks like there was some silt and sand that was in the pipeline that led to the failure down the road. So some of these things can go back a long ways. And that's the part that we definitely need to make sure we understand what exactly those seams are and how we can make sure that information flows back and forth.
Okay. I have a couple other topics. Anybody else have anything? Just to look at the consent agenda, when you mentioned withdrawal acknowledgement, does that mean that the case is closed? I was just confused.
Sure, there was two cases that I think it was it Hess that withdrew those? I'll have to double check real quick. The two items withdrawn, yes, it was Hess. And basically, they filed their initial complaint, and my understanding is that during their discussion with the people that they had the potential damage prevention cases, they got it worked up. And so I'm happy that they have it worked out, and their request to withdraw it, I don't have any reason to not support that.
The other thing is, are you aware of what Minnesota Power is doing with trying to get some hydro into the system from Manitoba?
I am aware of it in a lot of different levels. The way I understand it, there's 1,000 megawatts of hydro up in Manitoba, and they're trying to move that down into the MISO system, and there's discussion about whether it'll go in the northern route, if you will, dropping into the northern part of Minnesota and working through the Duluth area and coming down into Minneapolis, or if it would parallel the Minnesota-North Dakota border. I've expressed concerns via MISO that I would prefer that they use the eastern route, because we've worked hard to get that CapEx 2020 line built from the Fargo area to St. Cloud, and if they end up coming down western Minnesota, they would potentially use that double circuit availability for that line instead of something in the future coming out of North Dakota. So I'm certainly aware of it and certainly watching this unfold, and it's good. It's good to have the potential for hydro, but if it's there to meet current need, I think that's important. But if they're trying to use that to displace baseload coal in North Dakota, that's where we just have to watch very closely what's going on.
That's what I've got.
Just one question about the Hess pipeline. Do you know what the deadline is for construction?
Well, the pipeline is already in the ground. So it's an existing pipeline that they're converting to a different use. It's a gathering system right now, and they're going to be converting it to a transmission line. And I'd have to look back in the application, which I can do here, and find out when they had hoped to have that operational. Take me one second.
The commission has held several hearings in the last couple of years about lines that were initially designated as gathering that didn't meet the siting threshold. And then because of changes in operation or pressure, we go back and go through the review. And it's interesting because that's our chance to go through and double-check that their SCADA system is accurate, that their emergency response plan is accurate. So it's a different twist, if you will, to siting.
Where does that line originate from? Where does it go to? Where's the start?
Of this line?
Yes.
It starts, it's all south of Tioga. It starts at the Ramberg Truck Facility, which it is south of Tioga, I'm guessing about 10 miles, and then it runs to the Tioga Rail Terminal. It runs basically straight north and a little bit west to the Tioga Rail Terminal, which is just outside of the outside of town, south of Tioga. Ramberg Truck Facility.
So what it'll do is, as Julie pointed out, it'll be key to getting the trucks off the road, as right now they're currently going up to the train station and dumping directly there. Now they'll be dumping into a pipeline farther down the road, which will get the truck traffic out of town. So it's key, I think, we move on this, but it's also key that we take a step back and go up and look at the monitoring system.
Pat, you might be able to speak more specifically about when they wanted to be operational, because they applied last fall. It looks to me like maybe things have been delayed by them.
All they will be doing to convert the pipeline is adding a mainline valve on each end of the line and then putting in some pump stations. So they will be able to put that in operation very quickly as soon as we do the order.
And the goal here is not a very significant delay. As quick as we can get up there and get a look at it and get back. And I just want to double check that I fully understand what they've promised in their application. Okay. All right. Mike, anything else? Nick, do you have anything for us? Okay. Dave, going once, going twice?
I'm done. I'm gone.
Okay. And we just have John from Tesoro joining us today. For the media that's here at 11:15, we're still hoping to have PHMSA call in, and I suspect that'll be some interesting discussion. So if we could, maybe could we just proceed right into our admin portion of the meeting, and that way we can finish as much as – is there any reason we need to break?
Do we have any orders to sign?
Let's do this. Let's take a five-minute break and we can sign orders, and we'll come back at 11:45 with the administrative portion of our
meeting. Mr. Chairman, before we do a closing comment.
Yes, absolutely.
Regarding Dave's question about the hydropower coming in.
Commissioner.
I am concerned about the whole topic as we become more and more reliant on wind power. In many cases, not all, but in many cases, the logical backup, because we all know that the wind does not always blow. It might seem like it when you're working outside, but it does not always blow. And so in many cases, the logical backup is hydro. And I think we're almost to the point where you could call it illogical to think that you're going to build any new hydropower in the United States. Just extremely unlikely. And so when we use that as the backup, even though Canada is our very good friends at this point in time, we are relying on foreign power once again. And I have a lot of concerns about that, and I think it's something that is not in our best interests of the of us as a country, and it's not in the best interests of individual consumers to go back to increasing reliance on foreign sources of power.
So your real concern is that in the United States, to try to site a dam for hydro is virtually impossible.
Correct.
I would have to caveat, I guess, my thoughts on that is that I view North American energy security as energy security. We take a lot of energy from the Canadians, and I think we should continue to do that. North American energy security is something that you hear a lot of discussion about. But I do share my colleagues' concerns about becoming over-reliant on how wind integrates with the grid. But there's a lot. There's 1,000 megawatts of hydropower that is probably needed somewhere in the U.S. grid. The question is that I want to make sure that doesn't displace North Dakota energy. And I think that's part of the of why the routing can change. If you run through that northern part of Minnesota, it drops into the Minneapolis network, and then they can move on into the eastern part of the MISO. That, to me, that's where I would like that 1,000 megawatts to go. So it doesn't restrict the growth of North Dakota energy as maybe we move it down that second circuit of the CapEx line. So it's how the – I mean, you have to look at best ways to meet demand throughout the country. And that was some of the discussion at the energy conference is that, you know, with regional transmission organizations, we have our own responsibility of investor-owned utilities, but companies have a market that they play in that's very big for electricity. And now I think as we're going to find in gas, we've had meetings with – yesterday was the flaring conference, if you will, had some meetings with some of the gas producers. And I had the perception that we needed more uses for natural gas to help stop some of the flaring. Their answer was, no, we've got plenty of uses for natural gas. We just need to get the pipelines in place and the processing plants to move the gas to the market. So I think that's the same thing for electricity. As you find the generation, whether it's coal or wind or nuke, and you find the markets for it so we can have the energy security. And I think North American energy security is what we'd probably have to look at. Fair enough. Okay. Your chance?
I'm ready for the break.
Okay. All right. We'll come back in 5 minutes for the administrative portion of our meeting. Thank you.